that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like.
Go, give it to you.
How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience. That's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it?
Let's go, give it to you.
Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S.
Give up.
Order now at Acura.com.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 41 of the Footmarks podcast. I'm your host, Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me, as always, is Jared Kimber, who you can find absolutely everywhere. And it's a bit of an unconventional Footmarks podcast today because the title is Back to the Almanacs. And it is actually a Back to the Future reference because we'll be comparing and discussing two of the greatest sporting almanacs that we've been, made privy to. Of course, there's the oldest one ever, which is the Wisden's Cricket Sporting Almanac, and there's the Gray's Sporting Almanac from the movie. And before we get into the comparisons and debunking a lot of things and breaking the hearts of all of our viewers and listeners, Jared, let's talk about some of our memories from the movie, right? Back to the Future was a core part of my childhood. I'm pretty sure it was part of your childhood too. So talk to me about that.
Yeah, I think it was kind of that Indiana Jones, Back to the Future run, wasn't it, where we had, probably off the back of Star Wars, which even I'm not old enough for Star Wars, the major sort of movie franchises that I saw at the cinema, as a science fiction loving kid, I used to read a lot of science fiction novels and random sorts of things, and this is kind of science fiction for people who don't like science fiction, right? In a way, but it's still got that element to it, right? And always, I love the idea of it, and I think for a lot of us, we kind of learnt about time travel through this movie, even if we learnt nothing, as it turns out, because it doesn't make any sense. And I won't get into the grandfather paradox in this particular one, which sort of debunks some of this. But the point being that we it was the first time, me and my friend started talking about how it could work and what you would do and everything else. And so these films were, a massive part of that. I also spent a lot of time with my mad nan, who had a little bit of Doc Brown in her. So, there was a little bit of that going on, a similar kind of relationship. But yeah, certainly a part of my childhood. You're a generation after, but you still watch the movies, right?
Yeah, it was actually a bit different for me. I was 8 years old. And we were about to go to vacation to the States. So my sister had been to Universal Studios when she was a kid and she had watched these movies and she remembered the Back to the Future ride. And she was excited that I'm going to get to go on that ride. And it was basically this, 3D sort of thing where there's a screen in front of you and you think that you're moving with the screen and the car is doing
it. I reckon it was one of the first versions of that too, of that ride. Like, I think you're right. And I think a lot of people probably learned more. Probably the movies got popular again because the ride was so popular.
Yeah, so she was really excited that I'll get to go on the ride. And, back in those days, the DVDs and, VCDs, etc. were out. But my sister's collection was on VHS tapes. And she had taped those movies from, actual TV, which was crazy. And now that you think of it...
There's some young people out there going, she did what now?
Yeah. And I mean, to go through all of that hard work just to have a movie, with you on a tape. I mean, I watched all three of those, was kind of underwhelmed by the third. But the first two I absolutely loved. And I don't think I was introduced to the concept of time travel before that. Of course, now we live in a world of Marvel and Avengers, and where the grandfather paradox is challenged, and you have all different kinds of time travel. But this was the very basic sort of one that we were introduced to. Hey, you change something in the past and it has like a butterfly effect or a knock-on domino effect in the future. And it really like captured my imagination. And then I remember when I did go and I went on the ride, I loved it. I took pictures with Emmett Brown, or the guy who was dressed as Emmett Brown. And it's something I've tried to pass on to my nieces and nephews, but they just don't seem interested. I think that's one of the great tragedies of this generation, that they don't want to go into those classics, because sci-fi has changed, but Back to the Future is the stuff of legend.
To be honest, this morning, my three-year-old woke up on her own, went downstairs and demanded my son showed her Godzilla films. So it's not as much of an issue in our family as it is in other families. But yeah, no, I get your point. It's I think it's a defining film for a lot of people.
I mean, it's far better than Frozen.
Or series.
You know? Because every kid is just going, let it go, let it go. I mean, grab onto it, dude. Back to the Future is where it's at. And yeah, I mean, I've rewatched the movies plenty of times, but now we're going to go ahead and ruin the series for everybody, because the Gray's Sporting Almanac in Back to the Future 2, which originally Marty McFly, played by, what's his face again?
Michael J. Fox.
Yeah, that's like one of three movies I know him from.
Also, just before we go ahead, he was great in Teen Wolf, if you haven't seen that. But actually, Teen Wolf does not hold up as a movie at all. It's completely horrible. But just worth remembering that if you haven't seen Back to the Future 2, I know it came out 35 years ago, whatever it was, but if you haven't seen it, we are going to spoil virtually the entire movie here.
Yeah, so if you do intend to see it and haven't already, and if you want this podcast to be more fun, or, well, pretty much ruin, you know, your entire childhood or whatever for you, either way, you should probably watch the movie. But what it happens in the second part, because of the, is that the first part is Marty McFly, the lead role, who is Michael J. Fox, he goes into the past and, you know, he kind of makes his mom fall in love with him, and there's this whole incest thing going on over there. But
there's a lot of incest in movies of that era. There's a surprising large amount. Yeah. I don't think now, looking back at the MILF stepmom porn craze, that it's like at the time when it first started, I was like, why is everyone looking at porn of their stepmoms? Like, what's going on here? And then thinking back, going, oh, no, we already had that. We just didn't have the porn to match it.
Basically, it was Marty McFly who brought that to life, I suppose. But anyway, that's the first movie in which he goes into the past. The second movie, he goes into the future. And the present day in that time is 1985, where Marty McFly is like a teenager. Originally, he goes back to 1955. And then in the future, he goes to 2015, which is the second movie. And it's crazy how they show all of these futuristic things. And some of those things have been kind of implemented, but in a better way. And some of those things are flat out ridiculous, like flying hoverboards or whatever. But yeah, when he is in the future, he meets Biff, who is a family friend and also the villain of this entire series. And Biff in the future is someone who is meek and doesn't have any power, and he's kind of, you know, catering to the McFly family. And Marty's about to take the Gray's Sporting Almanac, because I'm sure he's a sports kid and wants to know results and all of that. I don't know if he had any ill intentions, but that's what...
No, he had ill intentions. He had ill intentions. He wanted to take the almanac, and he thought that if he went back, then he'd obviously be able to make a lot of bets and make money. He does... I think there's a conversation. I cut it out of the whole thing, but there is a brief conversation where a guy goes, can you imagine how much money I would have made if I knew the results of this? And Marty suddenly goes, oh, but I could know the results of all of this and make money. So he does have ill intentions with the almanac.
All right, we'll go with that. But anyway, Doc Brown convinces him that, hey, you can't take this, you know, into the past. This needs to stay here. And in that time, old Biff from 2015... It's funny how I'm saying old Biff from 2015, because 2015 was 9 years ago. But he kind of takes that almanac and gives it to young Biff in 1955 and tells him that, hey, you could be rich. You could bet on sports and make a lot of money. And young Biff isn't having any of it. But then old Biff, to prove himself, takes a game that is ongoing, which is between UCLA and Washington. It's an actual game that happened. And UCLA is down and out. There's pretty much no chance of them winning. And they do go on to win that game. And it's weird how old Biff, you know, calls the score line. It is the accurate score line. So the director did care about that. And that's what convinces young Biff. But what was off is that whoever's not watched the movie, this almanac is like this thin and it fits into a pocket. Whereas, I don't know, Jared, Wisden's cricket almanac, 1 year worth of records is what, 1538 pages and is quite a
big. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm trying to see if I've got a book here that's roughly the same as the almanac. Like, it really is incredibly. I mean, this is the Peregrine, whatever that bird's called, book by J.A. Baker. It's like thinner than this book, which if you're only is helping if you're watching the video, but we're not talking about like a thick book. And in fact, this book, I can just about fold it and probably get it in my back jeans. Whereas in the movie, Biff easily folds the book and puts it in his back pocket without any problem at all. So it's, and when you're talking about UCLA versus Washington, I'm assuming, I mean, you would know about American football, but you lived in Canada.
I did know somewhat about American football.
You know, that's not the NFL, right?
Yeah, it's college football.
College football. And so if they have every individual result of every college football team from 1950 to the year 2000, there's a lot of colleges who play football and they play a lot of games. And this wasn't a special game. This wasn't like a bowl game or, you know, anything major. I checked all those sorts of things. There's another game mentioned as well, another even smaller two teams. I think the other one might be Clemson and Maryland.
Yes, it is Clemson and Maryland.
Not even like UCLA, I'd heard of. Clemson and Maryland, I mean, I'm a basketball fan. I kind of know who they are, but like they're not major, you know, they're not universally known. So we're talking about really minor college football games that I have all the details of. And I'm like, well, what do they have? Do they just have the scoreline, which is very possible? Even then, you're talking about page after page of information on the scoreline. And that's the first thing that alerts you that there is absolutely no way this almanac could have it. And also, it's important that on the cover, it does say complete sports statistics. Right?
It also says results of every major sports, even till the end of this century. And that's 50 years. So it says 1950 to 2000.
And it's got boxing. Yeah, it's got boxing.
Horse racing.
Yeah. It's got all the American sports, boxing, horse racing. And horse racing is a really important one, which again, I didn't go massively into. Have you ever been into horse racing? Do you know anything about horse racing?
I've just seen it in movies.
Yeah. So if you go and you get like a proper statistic. So if a horse wins, right? You need to know, obviously, who came first, who came second, who came third. Sometimes they might have the entire thing. They might have the horse that came last, whatever that may be. They'll also have the distances that they all came from each other. They also need the jockeys. They also need the trainers. They also will have, quite often, who the horses were sired by, right? And who the mother of the horse was and this sort of stuff, right? They might have the ownership group and there might be a big ownership group, whatever that may be. There are thousands and thousands of races run, right, between 1950 and, well, hundreds of thousands of races run between 1950 and the year 2000. If you even if you just put in, again, who came first, who came second, who came third, with no other information, right, which is unlikely in horse racing fans, it would be like seven phone books worth of information that you would have to do. And so, again, you get, you know, and we're talking about, and when they're talking about horse racing, like he's at the Hill Valley Racecourse, which is, I don't know, in bumfuck nowhere, right? Like it's a small town. It's not the aqueduct, right? It's not one of their, you know, it's not the Kentucky Derby, right? It's a freaking tiny little thing. So if he has all the details to that, again, it makes absolutely no sense. This thing would be so freaking tiny.
I mean, think about it, right? The Wisden's Cricket Almanac, or Wisden's Cricketers Almanac of 2018, that version of 1 year alone, it had 1538 pages, which I cited earlier. And, you know, roughly between 500 to 750,000 words. Now, 50 years worth of all of sport, where you're claiming to have the complete sports statistics till the end of the century. And you're having all of these American college sports in there as well. Oh. So it's not just the NBA, NFL. Let's assume it's just American sports, right? Let's assume that Americans are being American and they talk about
football.
The world. Yeah. They always say World Series, world this, world that, but it's always just American stuff. Let's assume that it is baseball, the NFL, so football, and
hockey
and basketball, right? Just
and boxing and horse racing. Those are the ones that are on the cover. So those are the six we know for sure are in the book, right?
That is still an awful lot of sport, right? There were 153 yep. major professional teams in the USA, or still are right now. And that does not include like lacrosse and, I don't know, esports, which I'm sure wouldn't be a thing till the year 2000. But anyway, just saying.
I mean, football does get big, and not that they would have known that in the film, but football, they do get a professional league, don't they, in the 80s and 90s as well. You've also got track and field meets, mm-hmm. perhaps, like, you know. And,
yeah, it could be golf.
Softball, women's softball would be another one. Like, there is a lot, I mean, but even if it was just the NBA, mm-hmm. or if it was just the four major sports, and let's throw out boxing and horse racing for a minute, like, if it was complete stats, you wouldn't fit the NBA stats in a book of that size, right?
Especially how much they obsess over NBA stats, right? Like, you're a big basketball fan. There are like tens and thousands of metrics that they look at, particularly in the betting world.
Yeah. If you have the box score from each game, which if it's complete sports statistics, I would assume they're going to do, like, it would be absolutely big. But even if they just have the score and then at the end they have, you know, the leaders in each major category, it's still way too much. So it doesn't make, again, it doesn't really make any sense that they are trying to put it all together in this tiny book. But yeah, so when I wrote this piece for The Ringer, this is like a different version, because the version that The Ringer wanted me to write wasn't quite what I wanted to write, but they were desperate for that piece. And this one is written a little bit more the way that I wanted to write, a little bit more for sports fans, if we're being, especially for stats fans. When I put this out, all these people were like, oh, no, it would easily fit in this. I was like, guys,
what?
Like I've done the math. It's in the piece. You could see the amount of words required to do just a basic level thing of what they have on the cover would be like, you know, seven encyclopedias long. Like, it's just impossible to be able to do this and have all the college football. And if you add college basketball and college baseball and minor league baseball, like, can you imagine like the sheer number of things that they would have to put in here? So I think there are a lot of people very protective of the movie. And don't get me wrong, like, I still love the movie. This isn't a slight on the movie. But if you are a sports fan and we understand how these things work, and I'm in a rare position, right? I've worked for the Almanac. I do sports statistics, right? So I legitimately know how much work and how many lines of data needs to go into some of these things.
Yeah.
It's impossible. It's just obviously impossible.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
I mean, just take into account the fact that between 1950 and 2000, there were more than 90,000 professional baseball games alone. And in the NBA, you can say nearly 36,000 games. That on its own is 126,000 games. Add the 250,000 or whatever horse races that must have happened in between. And you're still not even counting the NHL and the NFL and all of the college sports. And, you know, the greatest sporting almanac, you know, it's a novelty item now, so it's available on Amazon and you can buy it. It obviously doesn't contain all the results, but it says 155 pages. You cannot possibly fit all of that into 155 pages. Even if you use the smallest font, you know, space it out.
Double spaced it.
Yeah, yeah. And even put like massive margins and try to fit as many words as possible in one page. It's just, it's not something that can humanly be done.
Have you read Wisden? Have you ever read a Wisden?
I have not.
Reading a Wisden is really hard, right? Is like, I don't want to slam Paul Lawrence because he's probably got a new one coming out soon. But reading a Wisden is one of the hardest things ever because it's, they make them small because that's how they were traditionally made. The paper's incredibly thin. You always feel like you're going to rip a sheet of the paper. And the writing is tiny. And it has to be to fit. Otherwise, you wouldn't even be able to fit all the stuff that they need to be able to fit into that one thing. And that's 1 year's worth of cricket, right? We are talking about 50 years of multiple sports here. And even if they don't go to the level of Wisden, and let's be fair, they're going to have at least a full-size book because it's about an A4 size book by the look of it. And I think when I've looked at the ones they sell online, they're mostly around that A4 size. Even then, like there's just no room for what they are alleging is in this book.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just misleading because you've got boxing and horse racing over there, but then throw in golf, which is a sport that Americans follow. Tennis is an important one. You've at least
got four
Grand Slams in a year, right?
Also, back in those days, Davis Cup was quite a major thing. So you'd have to have the Davis Cup results in, I would have thought. And the Fed Cup. Is the Fed Cup still called the Fed Cup? No. They changed the name of the women's... Davis Cup, and I always forget the name of it. But the point is that you're right, they had four majors. They would have had other tournaments as well. Obviously, the PGA well the Billie Jean King Cup. That's what it's called now.
And right now, we're not even considering cricket and rugby and sports that aren't popular in the States, right? Yeah. We're just looking at this from an American lens, but tennis and golf is popular over there.
But rugby, and you mentioned lacrosse before, I mentioned women's softball, all these things were played in college, right? And I'm assuming there was a legal betting market on some of these sports as well. So I would assume they were in there. So it's just, it's impossible. It's just frankly impossible for all of this to be in there.
Yeah, I mean, we've only talked about men's sports right now. I mean, throw in the women over here and the number gets ridiculously large and you have to double or close to double the size of that book or maybe reduce the font by more than 75%. I'm not sure. You might need a magnifying glass to read.
0.2 font.
Biff might definitely need one of those giant magnifying glasses, which I don't know how readily available they were in 1950, whatever. And
let's be honest. If this almanac was the actual right size, I think they would have struggled to get it in the DeLorean because the DeLorean doesn't strike me as a car with a lot of room inside, especially not what you've updated it for time travel.
Why would they not have like a decade edition to make it a little more believable, right? 50 years? That's crazy. Imagine a book for cricket. Imagine the Wisden's Cricketer's Almanac with 50 years worth of data and results. How big a book would that be?
No, it would be absolutely crazy.
Would it fit the size of this screen?
No, I mean, it would just be huge, right? Yeah. Like, it would just be absolutely massive. And Wisden's always been thick, right? Mm. So we're not even just talking about modern, you know, from the year 2000 onwards. It has always been a thick book. So there's... You know, once you start putting all these details in, it really does get incredibly jammed.
And what's alarming or surprising to me is that they actually cared enough to have actual results of games that occurred in reality in the movie. Yeah. But they were like, okay, no, we're going to have like a magazine for an almanac over here, not an actual book, which I don't know, even if you have just the results in there, right? There's no way you can fit it. But anyway, I think we've talked about the discrepancies and how the size is just simply not possible enough. Let's talk about some other stupid shit in the movie. So Biff has his first big payday at a horse racing event. He makes what? $1,182,000 off that bet. And Hill Valley is an extremely tiny town. You know, it's one of those suburban sort of villages of that era, you could say. This 1985 is also a long way back now, right? Which was modern day in Back to the Future.
But that was 1955, isn't it? Is when he's betting,
Biff goes all the way back to 1955 when he's betting. And, you know, that is where the McFlys reside and Biff resides. And it's interesting that he writes a column in a newspaper or has a column in the newspaper which says, you know, how lucky he's been and talks about his luck. That is a red flag if you're betting. So you do not want to talk about that?
There's two things here. One, I can't believe that the Hill Valley Racetrack had $1 million of bets that came in to match his bets. Right. So I don't know how they would have been able to pay out that kind of money to him. Two is the more important one, I think, here, which is what you were talking about, which is how on earth, right? How on earth would anyone who has these secrets to betting be stupid enough to tell everyone that they have this? Like, you would, so I don't know if you know much about this world, but it's really fascinating. And I know some of these people, and, you know, occasionally I've done consultancy for them and had job interviews for these companies and worked for them. I've never actually really worked in cricket betting, but I've worked around the people who do this. Do you know what they used to do? Is they, once they worked out algorithmically how to bet on football and cricket and tennis and all these different sports, they paid students to go from place to place putting bets on for them, right? And so they would pay a student to lay, let's say, 10 bets a day, right? Where they thought that the odds were stacked in their favor, and then they would do that. Then they would rotate different students in, and they would do it in different locations and all this sort of stuff, because they didn't want anyone to know that they had the answers. Like that, the levels that people who, and this is not people who have the answers. This is people who have a bit of an idea, right? You have to do that because eventually no one will take your bets, right? So the minute he makes that first win, no one who knows anything is going to take his money after that, right?
Yeah.
Because they're going to think he's onto something here, right? Maybe he gets a couple more bets down. The second thing is that he would have been betting on races, but he also quite clearly would have been blackballed, I'll get it right eventually, from any racetracks, right? In the same way that if you're really good at blackjack, they don't let you come in and play at casinos anymore because they realize you're counting cards, right? He would have been famous for that. So he would have been banned from racetracks pretty early on, right?
Yeah, I mean, you didn't have face tracking technology back in the day, but I'm pretty sure they had cameras. So casinos and racetracks would have a big picture of him that don't accept his money, don't let him bet over here, because why would they want to lose money, right? How is it even economically possible what Biff has done in this movie? It's not.
And once you, exactly. And then the next step is that the other thing he would have had to bet on would have been sports gambling, right? Which means he would have been betting directly with the mob.
Yeah.
Are you telling me that you want to bet with the mob if you have your face on newspaper articles saying you're the luckiest man alive? Like, I just think if you get a couple of bets out of the mob before they start to go, wait a minute here, what's happening, right?
Now, just to give context to the viewers, sports betting was illegal in the States till 1959. So he would directly be involved with the mob at least for 4 years. And he would not have survived. Biff wrote himself a death wish, literally, in the real world.
And I think even afterwards, like those big companies. So the way that gambling, you know, the way that major bookies and everything work is, they are not going to let him bet anyway. And who would they have been funded by? Dodgy companies anyway, who were already in the gambling space in that period. I think the smartest thing he does, though, and I will give him this, is that he does get sports gambling legalized. Which I do think is a really clever thing to do. Like, if you're making that much money, lobbying to get that done makes sense because you don't want to have to deal with the mob anymore, right? Yeah. But I just don't believe, based on everything we know about how stupid he is all the way through this series, the fact that his first win, he gets himself, like, on the newspaper, the fact that he starts calling himself the luckiest man alive and all this sort of stuff. I just can't believe that, like, he would have survived the mob and betting on sports. So maybe, best case scenario, he only bet on horse racing until he got sports gambling legalized. But he's so stupid, I just don't believe he would have done that.
Yeah. For those of you who haven't watched the movie, like, Biff is far more thick than the almanac. Let's just put it that way. The Grey Sporting Almanac.
Doesn't he get covered with shit? Like, doesn't the whole Tannen family get covered with shit in, like, every movie? Am I remembering that right?
I think so. I mean, it's been a while, but I do remember that, right? And I mean, look, the smart way to go about it would have been no photos, no publicity at all. Go undercover, underground, place small bets as opposed to big ones so that you don't get flagged. Rotate your bookies. Don't always go to the same ones because they'll, catch on to you.
And then eventually what you do is you hire people to make the bets for you. Basically. And you give them a percentage of it and everything else. Yeah.
Or, you know, Jared, you become a bookie yourself. I mean, imagine what Mazhar Majeed could have done if he got the almanac.
I think becoming a bookie yourself would have been the smarter option, right? Because that looks legitimate at that point, what he
only
was doing.
Only take the
rather
bets
than,
that people you know will lose.
Yeah.
That's easier. It's safer.
Right? And I think also he missed the big boom, which is actually, if you know who is going to be the next superstar. So do you know much about the story of Muhammad Ali?
I know a fair bit.
So yeah, he's a really good amateur boxer and he comes through. And well, this happens with a lot of young boxers. It's very hard to be a young professional boxer when you haven't boxed much and you haven't made any money. So generally what happens is people invest in you. And Muhammad Ali had that happen to him. And we've had that happen with other athletes before. It's not just a boxing thing. It has happened with other athletes at times as well. He knew who Muhammad Ali was going to be before Muhammad Ali, before those investors. He could have just gone and invested in Muhammad Ali. He then could have invested in Joe Frazier. He then could have invested in George Foreman. On top of that, he also knows Michael Jordan. Before Michael Jordan. So when Michael Jordan's off in high school and is being dejected, he could have gone off and bought Michael Jordan's career at a, you know, or become his agent or whatever he needed to be
That's what I'm going to say, because if he buys Michael Jordan's services, then he changes Michael Jordan's trajectory. But at that point, you don't need betting because you know that these athletes are that good. So they'll obviously succeed. And forget like agencies as well. Just become their agent and get them like contracts. And maybe have a trademark somewhere, sign a deal with them. Air Jordans, get some shares in Air Jordans.
Eventually, that's what you would do, right? But also, you would buy the Lakers or the Celtics. Mm-hmm. You would buy the Dallas Cowboys. You would buy the Yankees. And you would buy, I don't know, the Maple Leafs? Who's the best ice hockey team?
It used to be the Maple Leafs, but I think whoever that guy plays for, Sidney Crosby? Pittsburgh Penguins, is it?
Yeah, whoever it is. Whoever you think. Well, you probably wouldn't buy Pittsburgh because you don't want to visit Pittsburgh. But, you know, you buy whatever the team is you think is going to be worth the most money later on based on all the success that they're going to have, right? And, like, again, that's even easier. Then if you don't want to, you don't even have to be involved, with dealing with Muhammad Ali and Michael Jordan and, you know, who else would you have? Tiger Woods or Greg Norman, Jack Nicklaus, you know, all these, you know, Billie Jean King. You don't even need to get involved with all those sorts of people. You can just buy teams and just be like, well, these teams are going to be great. And you can invest extra money in so they're even better early on. So instead of the Lakers losing through the 60s and 70s, you just like spend a ridiculous amount of money to make sure that they win a couple of extra championships. Or you make sure that the Celtics keep winning, you know, and it's rigged because you know what all this is going to be worth. You know that if you have the team in 1960 and in 1990, you know, in 1990, that's after the Michael Jordan boom, when everything is worth a lot more money, right? Yeah. You know, you have all this access to all this information. He could have been a billionaire a million times over. And instead, what does he do when he stops betting? He goes into toxic waste.
Yeah.
Why would you do that? You have the answers in front of you in this book.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Yeah, it is quite ridiculous that he starts, investing in nuclear. And he could have, as you mentioned, bought teams. The Lakers were bought, or the franchise was bought from Minneapolis and moved to Los Angeles back in the day for what, $150,000? Which for Biff would be nothing. That is 1/10 of the money he earned from his horse race, right?
Exactly. So, it's not a lot of money, is it? And if that's the late, and if that, I mean, who knows? Maybe I'm being unfair, but I don't think, if you look, what did Jerry Jones pay for the Dallas Cowboys? All right, let's have a look at that. He bought the Dallas Cowboys for $150 million in 1989, right? And I don't want to know how many billion dollars the Dallas Cowboys is now worth, right? So if he buys the Cowboys, in the 50s and 60s and just goes, who were the coaches and the players? Okay, if I just make sure I match up the same coaches and players here. And that's without going, and also this guy was drafted in like the fourth draft. We could probably just pop him in as well. You know?
But I'll throw a curveball to you over there. The Almanac would not have the coaches and the support staff. So maybe what Piff should have done is, A, get royalty deals with all the major stars so that he continues to make money and his descendants continue to make money till the end of time. Because that way you're not actually impacting their careers. So you don't, you're still maintaining the trajectory and there is no domino effect. And then if you buy like minority stakes in these teams, you let the owners continue to do what they're doing so that the results are not hampered. Maybe that would be the holy grail. But no, nuclear energy is where he wanted to go.
I can tell you what I would have done. I think I would have bought the entire NBA in the late 70s. Just after the merger. And run the whole thing from there. Just because that's probably the price when you've got it at the lowest, right? There's two leagues. No one's quite sure, like, you know, what's happening. There's some stars in this league and everything else, not knowing that by 1990, that's going to be one of the best sports leagues in the world. But yeah, I do think it would have coaches. Like, I don't think this version would have coaches. But if you had complete sports stats, it would have to have the coaches and some of the star players and on different teams and everything. That's the other thing. We haven't even got to this. Imagine if it did have all the draft information, how long this book would be. But let's not even get into that again. But yeah, I just think there's many different ways. Like, if you like golf, you literally just keep funding young golfers as they come through. Like, you fly to Queensland for, you know, a young Greg Norman, and that's your 80s covered, right? You've already, you know, you go to South Africa in the 60s and, you know, pull Gary Player out of South Africa and, you know, and you know, you've got him and you've got Nicholas and you've got, you know, Trevino and all these different guys that you get. You know, then the women's tennis players, if you want, and the men's tennis players, you know, you start a stable of those and you have a tennis academy. Whatever you want to do, it's all very, very possible when you've already made some money from gambling early on. That's the far smarter play of how you would use that information if you don't want to be a bookie. Right. Yeah. And maybe not every, you know, bookie's not as sex. Like, wouldn't you rather own sports teams than be a bookie? That's just me. I would. But maybe I'm wrong.
I mean, as you mentioned, it shouldn't have stopped at sports teams. Right. I said minority stakes, but ultimately you'd buy out the entire league and you could be the kingpin of all sports. Biff could have been sports. OK, here's another thing he could have done. He could have started a athletic sporting wear brand and been bigger than Nike and sign all of these people beforehand. And the entire world would buy that brand then. Like, there were so many ways to diversify his portfolio rather than going into nuclear waste. And I mean, it's just as iconic as the movie is, clearly they didn't think this entire thing through. And or maybe they did and just they wanted to show how stupid Biff is.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's interesting. I suppose when the movie was written about 1988, was it? I think when Back to the Future 2 comes out, I should know the year. That the whole Jordan thing's just happening by that stage. Mm. But by that stage, we know that the Yankees and the Cowboys are already worth like a ton, right? So I think we knew enough information to put that together. But the writer of the screenplay, he's talked about this a little bit, but I don't know if he's ever sat down and done like a podcast like this talking about it. But he's on the record as saying the Almanac is too small. Right. So when it was hilarious when people are saying, you're wrong. I'm like, literally the writer of the movie is admitting now that he got that wrong. But as you said, they did get some really cool little details right, like the legalizing of the gambling, like the actual games that they could listen to on the radio and everything. So to be fair to them, they got some very cool little details right. But, you know, in our world where we know about stats and everything else, you know, we understand why this is, you know, woefully inadequate. But it's a fascinating thing of what I suppose that goes back to the original part of the conversation for you and I, which is when I was young, this led to us talking about what we would do with, you know, time travel. Right. And now I look at this and I go, what would I do with the Almanac? And I think that's the conversation that you and I are having is the kind of thing like, you know, what is it? CAA? Are they the world's biggest agents or IMG? Whichever one of those is the world's biggest agents. Like, again, you could just sign up the 50 greatest athletes every year to your agency when they were 15 or 16. You know, I mean, you sign Pelé when he's 15, right? Well, actually, Pelé may not be on this book, but you know what? You sign Kareem Abdul-Jabbar when he's still in high school, right? Like whatever that may be, you just keep signing them up one after the other. There's so many cool options that you could have with this kind of information.
End your contract with Muhammad Ali before the Vietnam War. There's so many things that you could do, right?
You stay with him because you know he's going to make even more money after when he fights Foreman. But maybe you pause it while he's on party.
Until you're back, we will pause it. But it's interesting. I was always used to think, or actually I've just thought of this, I'm lying, that what if old Biff maybe, attached a screenshot of the greatest rising stocks with that sports almanac so that you make a little money off betting. And in order to not get flagged, you kind of completely go into the stock market. And then if you have those Apple shares bought in, early 90s or whatever, the boom post iPod would have pretty much, I don't know, killed it. I mean, it is 2015, right? But then, of course, they wouldn't have known that stuff. But
Do you know what? I hadn't thought about that. But that's probably another usage is, you take the almanac and you just start a betting helpline for companies, and people pay you for that. In fact, I have a friend who wants to do that at the moment in cricket betting and basically take my knowledge and his knowledge of cricket and sell that to bettors. So we're not actually betting ourselves. But, because for someone like him who's a professional gambler, it's very hard. He's so good, it's very hard for him to get his bets on, right? Yeah. But what he can do is say to people, this is what I would be betting on, and this is the return I usually get when I bet. And if you're in a situation like Biff, that's probably, again, another simple way of doing those sorts of things. And there are plenty of charlatans who already do that, who don't actually make that much money for someone. In Biff's case, it's 100%, right? Like, he's going to make your money back for you. So, I think there were multiple options there. And it probably depends on, and I think the fantasy side of it is kind of what you think you could, what would be most interesting to you as a sports fan, right? Of how to use that information. And it's a fascinating one. And also how to get away with it.
Yeah, the getting away with it part is what baffles me, because what Biff did was, a recipe to get caught. He wouldn't have survived till after a few years. And I mean, like we mentioned earlier, he could have become a bookie. I mean, that's probably what Mazhar Majeed would have done. He would have gone back into the day and would have said that, hey, I'll be taking the bets, and then kind of rip people off that way. Have unrealistic odds for results that you already know, and boom, there's your money, right? And the movie is obviously a pop culture sensation. It's iconic in many ways. We spoke about the ride in Universal Studios and how every Halloween you probably run into a Doc Brown, right? It's still a thing. Now it's become Rick and Morty, actually. It's kind of evolved from that, but Rick and Morty is the
parody of Doc and Marty, isn't it?
That is how it started. That I think Dan Harmon has quoted that, actually, at some point. But anyway, it's so popular, even the almanac on its own, that, like we mentioned, it's available on Amazon. It's even available in Lego, and like you mentioned also, that people got really, defensive when you kind of challenge this discrepancy between the almanacs. Tell me, why was it such a big deal for you?
I think I was watching the film with my kids, and I've done a big Cool Runnings project as well, which we'll eventually do a video on and we'll chat about more, which is really fascinating as well. But you watch these movies with the kids and usually watch them multiple times, and suddenly you look up and something's not right. But then I suppose to me, there was something always kind of cool that sport was. Okay. I suppose the best way of putting this is that I was a kid that never quite fit in, because I was a writer a creative kid who, liked alternative music and everything. But I played cricket and basketball and football and tennis. And so I was with the sporty kids. So I was kind of always on both sides of that. I remember when I went to film school, for instance, and I was going to a football game, and I went to the football game, and on the way to the game, my friend was there selling something at the ground, and he couldn't believe that I go to film school and I go to football games. Like, it didn't make sense to him in that sort of world. And I remember that day, actually, I think it was that day, or it might've been another one. I then went straight from there to an alternative cinema to watch a film, and I still had my football jumper on. When I tried to buy the ticket, the guy at the ticket goes, "I don't think this is the movie you think it is." And I was like, yeah, no, this is fine. This is, isn't this the director and isn't this the star? And it was written by this person. And he's looking at me going, yeah, I don't think you've got the right movie. And I was like, pretty sure I've got the right movie, man. Just tell me with the ticket. And so there was always an element of me being in those both worlds, right? You know, I would, you know, be punching someone on a football field one day, right? And the next day I'd be performing in a play. And so this movie is that those two, my two worlds kind of clashing a little bit, right? Sure. Of the sport, you know, obsessive side of me and the pop culture side of me. So I think it probably means a little bit more to me as a kid. And it was only maybe later, it was probably only when I was working on this project that I kind of started to work out that it meant something to me. But also, like, I am a guy who works in sports stats. And so it does overlap legitimately with a lot of things that I know automatically. And so I just think all those things come about. But, ability to reconnect with those old movies, you just see them a different way because you're a different person than you were back in those days. And this movie more than holds up as a theatrical watch. As I said, I showed my kids Teen Wolf and we got about 15 minutes in. I was like, we can't watch this anymore, can we? This is horrendous. And so, you know, not all the old movies hold up, but this one did. But it was just, there was something about that I don't know, it obviously stirred something within me. And, you know, it's funny. A lot of people that I know that have now, you know, read that Ringer article will like get in touch with me and go, I mean, I've been sitting here for years thinking the exact same thing and no one's ever said it before. So sometimes it's just you're the person who says something out loud. Wait until the day I talk about Jurassic Park 2 and what happened on the boat, because there's a whole missing section of that movie that absolutely does my head in. But that's for another time. But I do notice those sorts of things in movies quite a bit. Mm. And, you know, if you watch these movies, like I will, if you have a look at my Twitter, there's a few times I've just contacted random screenwriters of animated films or of children's movies to thank them, because when there's no plot holes in a movie, or when the movie just really works, and it may not be a great movie, but when I will contact. So there's a, have you ever seen the movie Megamind?
Yes, probably, of course. No, I love that movie.
Oh, great. There's a scene in Megamind where the dialogue is wrong.
Hmm.
Right. And I've watched that movie, my boys must have watched that movie 40 or 50 times. Like, it's Will Ferrell. It was how I got them into Will Ferrell movies, right? So it was great. I had to contact the writer on Twitter and ask him a question. I said, because the dialogue here doesn't make sense. I would assume that this line had to get cut and that's why this line doesn't make sense. You forensically watch these movies again and again when you're a dad or a mum, right? And, you know, for me, whether it be Cool Runnings or, you know, Back to the Future, I'm seeing them differently now. And so they're popping to me in a different way.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. Checks out. And you are one of cricket journalism's great debunkers. You've also taken to the, you know, theatrical cinema or cinematic world and poor well, Back to the oh, Future.
I should even say after, this. I don't think you can find any of them anymore. I don't even know if it exists, but I used to be a film debunker on IMDb.
Okay.
So when IMDb used to have forums, like, this is like early internet, right? You know, the only two websites in the world that ever mattered were IMDb and Crickinfo, right? They were two of the biggest websites in the world. And I was on both of them because I was in both of those worlds, right? And on IMDb, they had forums. And I would go in and explain why there was something missing in this film or why this bit didn't make sense. Like, it's always been a part of it. And it's not to slag on the film. Sometimes it was mostly because I was trying to understand the films. Why did the director make this shot? Why did he take this camera angle? And then once you get into that, you're like, wait a minute. This character, he shouldn't be doing this. He should be doing this. Or this line of dialogue doesn't make sense because he hasn't said anything and all that sort of stuff. So it's always been there. And my dream was always to have my name on Crick Info and my name on IMDb. So when Death of a Gentleman came out, I fulfilled both of those goals, despite the fact that I don't really use IMDb that much anymore. But for in the old days, that was like the website, right?
What's the rating for Death of a Gentleman on IMDb? Let's check.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting.
We got slammed.
Make a guess.
7.2. 6.7.
7.2. It is 7.2. That's a pretty good rating. I watch most things that are over 7. You know, that means it's worth my time. But I honestly, like, if there are any cricket nerds out there, that's definitely a must watch. Interesting how you explained your rationale with respect to debunking movies and where it came from. Because after working with you for nearly a year, I feel like that's where the cricket stuff or cricket debunking also comes from. You don't want to slag on the cricketers. You want to kind of disprove a mainstream concept wrong. Like, you know,
I think
middle order batters.
Number fours. You know? Yeah. Mm. It's not even that I want to disprove something. It's for me to understand something, I have to take it apart.
Yeah.
Right. And when I do that, I'm going to learn a lot more about it. And then other people don't do that. Right. And that's fine. Most people are not made like me. They just want to go bang, 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 bang and go through it. And that's more than fine. Whereas my brain doesn't do that. Right. I can't stop what it is. And so it's not like with the number four piece, I didn't want to debunk it. It started with me going, I need to understand this. So
is it a
how
problem?
Does this work?
Is it actually a problem?
Hmm. Yeah. So I think I started with, obviously I've missed this because everyone keeps asking me about it. So it must be a thing. I need to understand it. And then I get in and then you get to the next bit that you said, wait a minute, is this a problem? Is this even real in any way, shape or form? And then next thing you know, I'm off to the races and I can't stop. Right. No one should be doing a 47-minute podcast on Grey Sporting Almanac. Right. But here we are. Right. And let's be honest. You know, now we both know I'm going to try and contact the screenwriter of this the same way I did with Aaron Sorkin. I tried to get hold of Aaron Sorkin to talk to why does cricket keep popping up? I need to know Aaron. Right. And I'm never going to feel complete until I actually get those conversations. And that's fine. That's what drives me to do these random things. But we do have, I should say, there will be a lot more pop culture stuff because it's been always in the plan since we started the YouTube. It was never supposed to be just cricket. It's just that the cricket stuff took off. So I won't go too much into it, but I've got some really cool stuff around Keanu Reeves that I've always wanted to do. And there's some really good stuff about Australians in cinema that is quite fascinating as well. And things like that. And I've never done the big episode on cricket in American pop culture, which is the other one that I've always wanted to do. Because you know, you've got the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, clip, and there's a few just great moments where cricket just pops up in American pop culture for no reason. It's fascinating the way they use it and everything else. So I'd love to do more stuff along those lines because it was, you know, I in another world, I could have easily just become a movie writer. It was just that the first blog, I just never really got around to it. That's not true. I did briefly have a movie blog, but the cricket one just took off 10 times quicker. So you have to go where that is. But, you know, I am a filmmaker. I'm actually more trained to be a filmmaker than I am to be a cricket writer, if we're being honest. So I do understand these things. And I understand the different choices. And I'm not slagging off Back to the Future at all. I think it's fantastic. It's just not a real almanac. We're just going to have to, you and I and everyone listening to this are just going to have to live with that fact.
Definitely, that's something that we're going to have to stomach and come to terms with. And if screenwriter Bob Gale owning up to it wasn't enough, there's this 50-minute podcast for you to listen to in which we literally debunk it piece by piece. And we still give a lot of love to the franchise and the series because, well, it's given us a lot of great memories. But yeah, on that note, I suppose, let's call it a day, Jared, for everyone who's still listening and all the viewers. Thank you for turning up and staying with us for this long. If you like this video, throw us a like, share this with your friends, and subscribe to both this YouTube channel and Jared's other YouTube channel. We'll be back with another episode of Footmarks next week. That is all for now. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Behram Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recording. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters. Both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.